हरि ओ चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
पेज 94 Lesson 44. Only the self-realized souls can see the absolute personality of Godhead when he descends by his internal potency. So, in connection with before, is saying that the Lord himself means he can only be known by devotional service. That means the Lord himself has to descend, or his devotees have to come. Then, through their preaching and association, then one can see the Lord. Right? So here it says, only the self-realized souls can see the absolute personality of Godhead. Right? Because he's coming through his internal potency. Others can have a glimpse of Paramatma or Brahman. But Bhagavan is only through devotion. Right? And that you're getting from the devotees. Right? From the Parampara. 9.13. O son of Pita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. The Mahatma does not divert his attention to anything outside of Krishna because he knows perfectly well that Krishna is the original Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. There is no doubt about it. Such a Mahatma, or great soul, develops through association with other Mahatmas, pure devotees. Pure devotees are not even attracted by Krishna's other features, such as the four-armed Mahavishnu. They are simply attracted by the two-armed form of Krishna. They are not attracted to other features of Krishna, nor are they concerned with any form of a demigod or of a human being. They meditate only upon Krishna and Krishna consciousness. They are always engaged in unswerving service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. Right? You know, so chapter 9 now being dealing with the elements of pure devotion, right? Because we've established karma yoga, jnana yoga, and everything. But then now about the pure devotion. So So he's saying that this one develops into a Mahatma by association. Right? There's no other point. Because association, and you're hearing from them. So you're in other words, you're hearing the philosophy, you're seeing it practiced. So that by that association, then one can take that up oneself. Right? And in this, it's saying that the Mahatma is only interested in Krishna, not even in any other forms of Krishna. It's not that they have an aversion to the other forms, it's just it's not so attractive. Right? It's just like, let's say you have fruit. Now fruit, you have your favorite fruit. Right? So if all are available, you'll eat your favorite fruit. It's not that you have an aversion to the other ones, it's just that it's nicer. So therefore, that's why it'll always be. Does that make sense? So everything is Krishna. So also they can understand the Brahman and Paramatma aspect. Just there's no attraction. Right? And if you're always absorbed in thinking Krishna as a person, then there's no need to deal with those other aspects. Does that make sense? Because even if you're dealing with them, you're dealing with them in connection with the person. Does that make sense? Okay. So this is then such a person is always then under the divine energy, under the internal potency. Yes.
Those who are attracted to the Mahavishnu form, so they are not pure devotees.
No, they can be pure devotees, but just here, as we're talking about, about Krishna, right? So those who are attracted to Krishna, that those who are trying, they're also pure devotees. They're just not pure unalloyed devotees. That's only in Braja. The pure devotees, anyone in the spiritual world, is a pure devotee. Yes.
Then what's the difference between a pure devotee and a pure unalloyed devotee?
Unalloyed means, that means there's no mix. There's no mix of anything for oneself. So even spiritual desires aren't there. In the way of that, in Vaikuntha, you can want to be on the same planet or want to be an associate or have the same features or same opulence. But that's something that you want, like that. But in Braj, then they only want to please Krishna. So all their desires are simply in connection with how to make Krishna happy. There's nothing separate. So that's why it's unique. Okay. 9:14. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. The Mahatma cannot be manufactured by rubber stamping an ordinary man. His symptoms are described here. Now, Mahatma is always engaged in chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead. He has no other business. He is always engaged in glorification of the Lord. In other words, he is not an impersonalist. When the question of glorification is there, one has to glorify the Supreme Lord, praising his holy name, his eternal form, his transcendental qualities, and his uncommon pastimes. One has to glorify all these things. Therefore, a Mahatma is attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, yeah, his point, he's always glorifying the Lord, always engaged in the service. So again, we have the instruction and the practice. Right? So here is that discussing about the Lord, it's not a burden for them. They like talking about the Lord. They like thinking about the Lord. Right? And then, because they're thinking about the Lord always, then they're going to be engaged in service. So that's the application of the glories of the Lord. Right? So it's natural. It's not something that they have to worry about or think about. And then, so that means that, technically speaking, a Mahatma only means someone who understands the personality of Godhead. If they don't, technically they're not a Mahatma. Right? You know, not what Krishna is talking about here. Because this section is on pure devotional service. Right? The middle six chapters. So he's not talking about someone who's a great soul, meaning that they are on the liberated platform. He means someone who's a great soul, who's on the eternally liberated platform. Right? Right? Because otherwise, in comparison, yes, the liberated soul is advanced. He's special. He's a great person. But here, what Krishna is talking about is someone who's always absorbed in him as a person. Right? So that is actually the great soul. Because the other one may be great, but tomorrow he's not great, so you don't really count him as great. You know what I'm saying? You know, the Forbes magazine is not going to mention the guy who was a billionaire for 3 days. You know, it comes out, however it comes out, but if he's not a billionaire when it's published, then you're not going to mention him. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, therefore, someone who was liberated is not going to be mentioned as a Mahatma. Does that make sense? Yeah. 10:3. He who knows me as the unborn, as the beginningless, as the supreme Lord of all the worlds, he only, undiluted among men, is free from all sins. As stated in this, they're mentioning these things because there are all these mentalities that people will get distracted by. And Mahatma is just, everyone decides this person's great, so they call him a Mahatma. Right, so it's just kind of like a title, but the actual definition of Mahatma means one who's an advanced devotee, right? Who's always absorbed in hearing, chanting, serving the Lord. Right? So then here also is that there are those who may say he's supreme, but or he's unborn and beginningless, but not as the supreme Lord, or he's the supreme Lord, but he appeared, you know, at his particular time, you know, through the mode of goodness. To instruct or give us a direction. Does that make sense? So the impersonalist will take both of these positions. Right? The beginning, unborn and beginningless is Brahman, but there's no person. Or if he's a person, then there is a beginning. Right? And there'll be an end. Right? Because Brahman will be the ultimate. So it's just a manifestation, you know, on goodness while we're in passion, ignorance, deluded, while he is like that. So then amongst that, he only, undiluted amongst men, is free from all sins. So that means then the other one, still there's sin. Now one may say he's liberated. Where would the sin be? But the sin, we have to remember, is sin is defined as not God conscious. Right? And piety is God consciousness. Does that make sense? As stated in the 7th chapter, 7:3, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. Those who are trying to elevate themselves to the platform of spiritual realization are not ordinary men. They are superior to millions and millions of ordinary men who have no knowledge of spiritual realization. So here we're saying, yes, we're acknowledging that someone who's liberated is not ordinary, right? But we won't count that as the topmost. But they're not ordinary, right? And it says millions and millions. And so, you know, one such person liberate is superior to millions and millions of ordinary persons. But out of those actually trying to understand their spiritual situation, one who can come to the understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the proprietor of everything, the unborn, is the most successful spiritually realized person. In that stage only, when one has fully understood Krishna's supreme position, can one be completely free from all sinful reactions. Because before that, there won't be, because one will come back again. Right? Because reaction means you'll end up in a, you know, ordinary position within the material sphere. So the reaction of being coming to the liberated platform is one will get bored in that neutral state, and one will again think of the material activities. So then they're not completely free. The conditioning is gone, but the idea I'm the controller and enjoyer is still there. That will bring them back to here. Because controller and enjoyer means material. I am servant, right, of Krishna. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. That's spiritual. That's transcendental. So even though they're situated, right? Yeah, trying to understand their spiritual situation. Right? So that's the point, it's the situation. They're not actually acting on the spiritual platform. They're spiritually situated. Because on the spiritual platform, they do nothing. So you can't say that they're spiritually active. Does that make sense? You're only dealing with the situation. So they're in the spiritual situation, but the consciousness technically is still material. Right? It's not detailed material. It means they have no attachment to anything specific in the material world. Right? But it's on that first platform of weakness of heart. Right? Where they want to control and enjoy. So the principle is still there. Does that make sense? So this is tatastha. You know, to be situated spiritually but still have the material, the seed or the foundation of the material consciousness. Does that make sense? So in the same way as the Mahatma, they may be situated within the material world, but their consciousness is on the spiritual platform. Does that make sense? Sri Krishna is therefore different from everything that is created, and anyone who knows him as such immediately becomes liberated from all sinful reactions. So he's different from everything created. You know, it's a bit, here's saying it in a different way. So Prabhupada in another place mentions that Krishna being the source of the material and spiritual worlds, that means he's beyond spiritual. Right? Because spiritual is the manifestation. And definitely spiritual will say it means not material. Right? It's above, like transcendental. Right? But he's beyond that. So he's something else. Does that make sense? So one who understands that then is free from everything because he's the source of everything. But with his spiritual potency, the internal potency, then he performs his pastimes. Yes.
When you say tatastha shakti, that's, it can go both ways, right?
Tatastha simply means that the spiritual and the material are functioning at the same place at the same time.
Okay.
That's what it means.
So the impersonal is...
So you have the individual jivas, mm-hmm. but then you have also just the potency. We are from that potency, mm-hmm. but that potency itself is what, just like the souls in the body, how do those two stay together?
Mm-hmm.
That's the tatastha shakti.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, that the Lord's holy dham and the material world are there at the mm-hmm. same time. Right? You know, in the Boma Lila, that's tatastha shakti. Right? Because both energies are manifest at once.
Okay.
You know, we're used to, there's this one and there's that one. There's a material world, there's a spiritual. But tatastha means they're both in the same place at the mm-hmm. same time. So that's, the point is, if we can appreciate that, it doesn't matter which way you apply it.
Mm-hmm.
Material situation, spiritual consciousness, or spiritual situation, material consciousness. Right? Because if it's there, then one has no problem. One's in this material situation, the material body, right? But the soul is transcendental, right? So that's the one aspect. Now, whether they're conscious or not, adding the consideration of consciousness, now they may be have material consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Materially situated, they themselves are spiritual, but material consciousness. Right? So you have this, you know, all these different aspects where mm-hmm. tatastha is holding together. Or, as the Mahatmas, you have the material situation, right? The soul is spiritual, but the consciousness is spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So those two are functioning at once, right? Or we have those what may be within the spiritual phenomena, right? But are not phenomena, manifestation. But they have material consciousness, like the demons in Vrindavan. Right? Vrindavan, they're in the dham. So they're situated within the spiritual realm. But their consciousness is material. Does that make sense? Right? Right. Or you have, yeah, like that. Does that make sense? So one who understands that Krishna is beyond all this, then he is, then they're liberated from all sinful reactions. Because then one understands things as they are. Right? Because being bound means being an illusion. When one understands Krishna's position, one's not an illusion anymore. So one's liberated. It's that simple. You know, we have, what do you call it? We were discussing yesterday. We have simplicity issues. We don't like it so simple, right? You know, I mean, some things, yes, simple. I'm God, right? That's simple. You know, that works, okay. But, you know, other things, then you like it more complicated, right? You know, more sophisticated, you feel better about yourself. But with that. 10:9. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. Pure devotees, whose characteristics are mentioned here, engage themselves fully in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Their minds cannot be diverted from the lotus feet of Krishna. Their talks are solely on the transcendental subjects. The symptoms of the pure devotees are described in this verse specifically. Devotees of the Supreme Lord are 24 hours daily engaged in glorifying the qualities and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Their hearts and souls are constantly submerged in Krishna, and they take pleasure in discussing him with other devotees. In the preliminary stage of devotional service, they relish the transcendental pleasure from the service itself. And in the mature stage, they are actually situated in love of God. Once situated in that transcendental position, they can relish the highest perfection which is exhibited by the Lord in his abode. And so this constantly being absorbed, so that means it can be done, but one should be looking for it. Right? So one should be looking, trying to see how that can be done. Right? And we know that of all the different aspects to be absorbed, then Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman, Bhagavan is the ultimate. Right? But the point is to be connected to the Lord. Right? And then ultimately it comes to always being about the person. Okay, so then in the preliminary, they get transcendental pleasure from the service itself. They're running the service, the service itself makes them very happy. Right? That's why they do it. The kirtan was great, or it was nice, you know, the lecture, or I did the service, it was so nice, you know, doing the decoration, or making some, or something like this. But it says the mature stage, you're actually situated in love of God. So whatever they're doing, they're thinking of the person and experiencing that in relationship to it. So it doesn't mean that the enjoyment of the servant goes away. It's just it transfers to being absorbed in Krishna. You understand? So that's why the service is non-different. Does that make sense? But to discern, then the point is made is that the person is still different. Otherwise, we want, you know, what will be the difference here? Right? Once situated in that transcendental position, they can relish the highest perfection, which is exhibited by the Lord in his abode. Right? Because then it's just the interaction between the Lord and the devotees. It's not the service itself as the experience of the Lord's pleasure and his interactive action based on that service. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just that, it's not that the one goes away, it's just the other. It's just like you have a candle. So if you turn on the light, it's not that the light from the candle goes away. It's just that the other was so much more appreciated. Does that make sense? You know, it's the same principle as that these other forms of Godhead, it's not a problem with them, it's just that Krishna is the one that you're absorbed in. So this idea is that, no, we only like Krishna and Vrindavan with the gopis and all other forms, we're not interested in. That's not the point. No, he's just naturally attracted to that. But it's not that he has a problem with the others.
Could it be that the preliminary stage, that service is still impersonal?
No, not necessarily it's impersonal. It's just that one is absorbed in, I mean, there will be that element, but I wouldn't define it that way. That would be what Prabhupada was talking about before, saying the tendency is towards the impersonal elements, that you're using those, you know, the immanent more of being able to see Krishna in things like this, rather than being able to perceive Krishna directly. So, but in this is that we're absorbed, the senses are absorbed in being engaged in the activity. And because that's what we're used to, then that's where our happiness comes from. Because Krishna is happy by the service, so we're perceiving it through the medium. The happiness more through the medium, rather than the happiness coming directly from the source. You know what I'm saying? It's just the difference is, you wanted to do an activity for somebody, you did that activity, you're very happy because the activity went well. And there's, you know, there's that person's pleasure. So that person's pleasure, but it's being appreciated through the activity. Does that make sense? But if that affection is even greater, then it's not the activity that's prominent. It's the interaction with the person. Right? So when just naturally it goes to what is that experience of interaction as opposed to the medium of interaction.
It's a little bit of a shift of, you know, mood or consciousness, like the formal business meeting as compared to a congregation of friends.
Yes, you could, but it can be the friends, it's just what they're doing, you know. You know, they go out and do something. And that was great, yeah, you know, we did whatever the activity, and they talk about the activity. But you can also just sit there and appreciate each other's association. And if you do those activities, it would have been the feelings that they experienced between them during the activity that would be prominent, as opposed to the activity. The formal and informal would be, you know, whether it's Vaidhi or Rag. You know, that would be there, like that. Okay. 10:10. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but if he's still not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of service. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain Him. Right, so now the body, mind, words are engaged in the Lord's service. So if one is intelligent to be able to apply the process, you know, understanding how the philosophy works, being able to see how to apply it, then that would be, you know, the natural state. But if one is sincere, you know, and does things to his best of his ability, but doesn't have such intelligence, then Krishna from within, he'll give it direction. Like that. So that one comes to that point. Does that make sense?
What does it mean, the work should be with love?
The work should be with love.
What is that?
Why, what do you... What is the doubt?
What is love?
Love would mean that you're doing something for the other person's pleasure.
Ah.
No, it's not for yourself.
Ah.
Right, because love is in the position of prayojana, so it would have some connection with the results, so the results for Krishna. That's why the whole process is this thing of naishkarmya. Okay, so we can relate to, okay, material is this activity, spiritual means giving up the result. I mean, giving up something. You know, so to give up the result, then that we can relate to that. You know, understand? So that's the form of it. But the real point is you're doing that to please the other person. Right? Or you're doing it to please the other person. That would be then sacrifice. So naishkarmya. Then naishkarmya being applied, then that's sacrifice. Right? Because you want to please the other person. But it doesn't mean that you don't want to please yourself also. They're pleased, you're pleased. You know, that kind of thing. You're doing it that when they're pleased, then I'll get done what I want. Like you sacrifice... You do something to please the demigod, and then you get what you want. You get elevation in heavenly planets or whatever it is you're looking for. Does that make sense? But here is that you're doing it to please the other person for their pleasure only. Right? Does that make sense? So then that would be the devotion. So that can only happen if it's in connection with the Supreme Lord. Because if it's not in connection with the Supreme Lord, there will be some motive. You know what I'm saying? If something's in connection to the Lord and you're dealing with that, then it can have the same element. But the point is ultimately it's the Lord. That then it will be on that part.
Is it a case of one does one's duty and then there's some affection arises and then gradually the affection?
Naturally. Just by association. It means if it's not natural, then by association, affection arises. Right? It means that's Krishna recommends, just immediately surrender. That's the best. If not, you follow the process. So by performing your duties, then by that association, then affection arises. Right? That's why in the Vedic system, that since relationship is the most prominent, then duties are based on your rights and responsibilities in a relationship. Right, whatever it may be, individually or as a group or as a you know, a body or like this. You know? So then if you don't have duties, then how will relationship be expressed? Even if you're doing it for yourself, at least you're not disturbing the situation other than your consciousness. Right? The form is correct. Does that make sense? So that's why the Vedic system uses these. But then, due to ignorance, then we'll consider irreligion to be religion. right? So that means not following the Veda thing. That is religion. And following the Vedas, that's irreligion. Oh, this is not proper. You can't do that in this age, or nobody like that. Or generally speaking, when we say you can't do that in this age, we just analyze this one point, is that what are they meaning? They're actually meaning that they don't like that. You know, it's something wrong with it. Not that, oh, this is perfectly fine and it's great, but these people aren't going to understand this. And, you know, we're trying to work on that. No, it's about, this won't, you can't do this. Because that's when the statement is being presented. That, oh, Prabhupada said this, but you can't do that. It means that they don't feel that it actually is religion. They feel that there's actually inherently something wrong in it. Otherwise, why would you present it that way? You know, it's just like you want to give the, you know, the tribal some gift. So you pull out some money, right? And you think, we'll give this to them. And then your friend who is more, you know, knowledgeable in the, you know, jungle culture, then he stops you and says, no. You know, it says it's a nice offering, but he's not going to appreciate a bunch of paper. You have to give him something that he would feel is of substance. You know, does that make sense? You know, so he'll get a clay pot or get a cow or, you know, get a, you know, a basket full of witchetty grubs or, you know, something, you know. Which is, does that make sense? But that's a difference than saying, no, this is not there, you know, money, this is all nonsense and this and that, and it doesn't work in this age. And that's all actually taking irreligion to be religion and religion to be irreligion. Because when one thinks that one's particular perspective, that is actually culture.
And the Vedas are material because they're temporary? If they don't work now?
Yeah, then they would. Yeah, because the Vedas are apurusheya, it's eternal. Yeah, because if it doesn't work now, eternal means always.
So it's atheistic?
Yes, yeah, atheistic also. Besides being, you know, I say, irreligion is, you know, religion is irreligion, so it's atheistic. So, but it's a matter of application. You know what I'm saying? It's like if you want to cut something, the knife always works. But depending on whether you're cutting it fine or in bigger pieces or the thing's very hard or it's very soft, you may use the knife differently. So you have to know how to use. But it always works. So the Vedic rules always work. But it's just know how do they apply in the particular situation. You know. Yes.
It's interesting to notice that in our society, people from many different backgrounds coming, and then they throw everything into their own preaching, mm-hmm. and it's kind of a big mixture of all things.
Yeah, yeah. But there's one thing in common. Nobody likes the Vedic culture. Right? Because you can just say, you know, if I say, no, the Vedas and this and that, and I don't think, you know, and this, everybody will, oh, okay. But if I say, well, that's American, I don't think that, no, what? What are you saying? Oh, well, that's English, you know, oh, that's Aussie or something like that, you know, like that. Oh, well, they do that in Romania, you know. Then they just go, hey, well, you know, that's socially incorrect. You know, you can't talk like that. And that. But if I say, oh, you know, it's Vedic, it doesn't apply, then everybody, oh, okay, yeah. So that's the common ground. You know, it's just like amongst academics. They may not like each other and this and that, and different have different, but they all don't like the Vedic culture. Right? You know, that's the one common point that you could say would hold all of them together. So that shows its universal application. Otherwise, why would everybody have a problem with it? Like that, yes.
That's so contrary to the original Vedic principle that if somebody says it's Vedic, therefore it's immediately accepted.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be an incredible propaganda program that's been put into place to shift.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just the natural doubts. Like before, two devotees could have an argument. And the somebody comes and said, no, but Prabhupada said this. Bang. The argument is over. That nanosecond. No one even says one more thing. No one tries to finish their sentence. No one tries to, no, but, you know. No, it's just, oh, okay. You know what I'm saying? But now that's not necessarily. So it's just a matter of proper, you know, faith and conviction, you know, and understanding that the cultural elements are the application of the philosophy. So means it's not as much the forms as the mood that goes with it. You know what I'm saying? So you can use. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur were very so dynamic, is that they could use the modern forms, but their perspective on the philosophy and all that and what is called didn't change. It's just that what you use. You know what I'm saying? For a preaching program, Bhaktisiddhanta would wear all kinds of things. You know? But, you know, over his daily life, he would wear the standard clothes.
Prabhupada also, he would use Sanskrit grammatical form in his presentation of English.
Yes. Like that. So there's all kinds of cases that are used, the stuff that the English wouldn't even understand exist within themselves. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so the devotee is sincere like that. You know what I mean? In other words, he's trying, very much trying to perform the activity as he's understood it. But they're not that intelligent. Krishna will, then from within the heart, will give him that intelligence. Look at that. 10:11. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. Sometimes Mayavadi philosophers criticize the devotees because they think that most of the devotees are in the darkness of ignorance and are philosophically naive as sentimentalists. Actually, that is not the fact. There are very, very learned scholars who have put forward the philosophy of devotion. But even if a devotee does not take advantage of their literatures or of a spiritual master, if he is sincere in his devotional service, he is helped by Krishna himself within his heart. So the sincere devotee engaged in Krishna consciousness cannot be without knowledge. The only qualification is that one carry out devotional service in full Krishna consciousness. Right? So if he's carrying out in full Krishna consciousness, then it'll work. Krishna will reveal. Like that. So it's not that, oh, you know, one doesn't apply oneself and then you'll just, well, what Krishna reveals. No. It's one is sincerely absorbed in trying to apply Krishna consciousness. The Mayavadi philosophers think that without discriminating, one can have pure knowledge. For them, this answer is given by the Supreme Lord. Those who are engaged... Mayavadi philosophers think that without discriminating, one cannot have pure knowledge. For them, the answer is given by the Supreme Lord. Those who are engaged in pure devotional service, even though they be without sufficient education, and even without sufficient knowledge of the Vedic principles, are still helped by the Supreme God, as stated in this verse. Because their whole point is gyan, so without discriminating, because knowledge means discrimination. Right? So without discrimination, then they're able to advance. So the Mayavadis, in their practice, that couldn't happen. So only someone who's in their conditioned state is intelligent would be able to take part in the process, would be attracted to or take part in the process. Right? Difficulty again, then, is their philosophy is based on the material conditioning. Right? You can advance because you have a particular kind of conditioning. But if all the conditionings are illusion, why should it matter which one it is? Yes.
Maharaj, do they have a concept of kripa, like mercy?
But mercy would have to come from a person. Mm-hmm. Right? So there wouldn't be. No, because they think it's by their own endeavor. Right? But if it's all illusion, well, what does it matter how you endeavor within You know, it's just like that. You know, in the mirage, whether you, you know, that oasis there, whether you climb up the coconut tree, get a coconut, bring it down and open it and drink it, or you just sit there under the tree, either situation, you're going to be thirsty. You know, it doesn't really matter. So but somehow or another, it's all illusion, but their endeavor within it gets the result they want. No, sorry. So it's a problem. So for all their discrimination, they discriminate up to the point where, to the spiritual platform, but they can't discriminate within spiritual. They can tell the difference between matter and spirit, but they can't tell the difference of the variety of spirit. So that means they're not that intelligent. So that's why even sometimes they'll be referred to as less intelligent. Right? Is that what I said? They can't tell. So, as in the previous thing, but still, their position is still, much of the time, you know, worth millions and millions of ordinary persons, and that at least they can discriminate matter and spirit. But since they can't discriminate within spirit, it's not the highest platform. Does that make sense? Due to the contamination of material association through many, many millions of births, one's heart is always covered with the dust of materialism. But when one engages in devotional service and constantly chants Hare Krishna, the dust quickly clears, and one is elevated to the platform of pure knowledge. The ultimate goal, Vishnu, can be attained only by this chant and by devotional service, and not by mental speculation or argument. Right? Because it's not just discriminating that gets to attain the Lord. It's a matter of endeavor. You know what I'm saying? It's you want something. Just because you've sat and you've sat with your friends and you're looking at the magazine and go, I think this investment is better. No, this one isn't better. No, but look here. You know, here this guy says this and that. No, but look at the chart over here, you know, and this and that. They can go on arguing for days. Now, will either of them become wealthy by this? No. It's only by investment. Results only come from endeavor. So, of course, they've made the endeavor to discriminate between the two, and they will get the result of discriminating between the two. But that's all they'll get. They won't actually get any result from the spiritual platform. Right? Because you're situated there, but it doesn't mean you're getting anything from it. Does that make sense? Like you can be situated in the supermarket, but it doesn't mean if you don't interact, you're not going to get anything from it. Does that make sense? So that's their point. That's why less intelligent. The pure devotee does not have to worry about the material necessities of life. He need not be anxious, because when he removes the darkness from his heart, everything is provided automatically by the Lord, who is pleased by the loving devotional service of the devotee. So you need not be anxious, because everything's Krishna anyway, and he's taking care. Why is the material energy here? Because we wanted it? No, because Krishna arranged it. And so everything is there. Everything is arranged. Now you do good work, you get good facility. You do bad work, you don't get good facility, right? So within the realm of piety, how do you define good work? Right? Is it according to Shastra or not? According to Shastra, who's defined Shastra? Right? The Lord. So what does that mean? It means it's more close to what he would consider correct. So it's the correct activities. Piety is the correct activities, but devotion means the correct attitude. Right? So I have correct activities, spiritual attitude, I get myself liberated. I have correct activities, I get the heavenly pleasures. I have correct activities, spiritual mentality, I get liberated. I have correct activities, devotional mentality, I go back to God then. You understand? So this element of so the whole point is if you're pleasing the Lord, then you get higher and higher results. So if you're doing devotional service, why won't Krishna take care? Right? Because he's the one arranging the whole thing anyway. But you'll get something only because you please the Lord. Now, whether you know you're pleasing the Lord or not, that's another thing. So if you know you're working to please the Lord, then why even better you wouldn't get? That makes sense. This is the essence of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. Right? Is that Krishna will take care. This is the essence, because this is verse 10:11. So this is the fourth of the Chaturshloki in the Gita. So he's showing that he is involved in this process. Right? Yeah. Okay, so 10:10 is, so it seems to be the same kind of layout like in the Bhagavatam. You have two on Sambandha, then the third is on Abhideya, and then the third is Prayojana, fourth is Abhideya. So here, he dwelling within the heart, he takes care of all these things. So that interaction, that reciprocation with the Lord, he's removing the ignorance, he's providing the facility. The point is that one is making that sincere endeavor to please the Lord. Right, that's what's going on. By studying Bhagavad Gita, one can become a soul completely surrendered to the Supreme Lord and engage himself in pure devotional service. As the Lord takes charge, one becomes completely free from all kinds of materialistic endeavors. It says, as the Lord takes charge, as you surrender, then that means Krishna takes charge. It's not the modern context that you surrender but you don't get anything back. So they just want you to surrender so they can control. No, here's, you surrender so Krishna takes care. Right? You know, it's like the mother wants to feed the child, but the child's not surrendering. Right? You know, they have their own ideas. So as this child surrenders, he gets fed. You understand? It's not a matter of that you surrender and then one will be taken advantage of. No, it's that's what we do as God, right? You know, so, you know, but God doesn't do that. You know what I'm saying? So he takes care of everything. He gives the knowledge, right? He gives the facilities. Lesson 45.
That's a nice analogy, Maharaj. The child realizes he surrenders and gets fed.
Yeah.
Like as one surrenders to Krishna, then he rewards.
Yeah, he rewards. But here it's the interaction that's the important thing. You know what I'm saying? The affection is what's the important. But affection is always shown through a medium. Right? That's what makes it interesting. So therefore the medium is there, the facility is there, and the knowledge is there. But the facility we have, we're detached from. And the knowledge is in connection to Krishna. So devotional service, jnana and vairagya, are automatic. So the point is as you are detached, you can use more facility. If you're more attached, you can work with less facility. Okay. Lesson 45. The Archamurti is the transcendental and identical representation of the Absolute Personality of Godhead for the benefit of those conditioned souls who want to approach Godhead. Because now we've been giving, what was it? What a weird page. Right? Okay, he's both. So it's possible because he is 6, where is 5? Confidential servants of the Lord explain that any man can attain to transcendental loving service of Godhead by his own occupation. Right? And this is possible because Godhead is both immanent and transcendental. So here's the last aspect in the further explanations of how he is transcendental. Ah. 926. One offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. In the third chapter, verse 13, Sri Krishna explains that only the remnants of sacrifice are purified and fit for consumption by those who are seeking advancement in life and released from the clutches of material entanglement. Those who do not make an offering of their food, he says in the same verse, are eating only sin. Right? Because whatever one's doing, all activities are supposed to be done as sacrifice. Right? So the ultimate sacrifice means to Vishnu. So if one's not doing that, then it's only sin. Right? Right? In other words, it's no different than an animal, because that's what an animal does. But human, you could say, but the animal does it, there's no sin. Yes, but the animal's an animal. He doesn't have the ability to know that there's something higher. So if one wants to, you know, redefine oneself as an animal, then that's okay. You know? Like that. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, that definition would have limited social application. Right? You know, some circles, maybe down at the professional wrestling rink, then, you know, it would have something, you know, guys, the animal, you know, something like that. You know, it would work, you know. But you know, if he goes out to dinner and all that, you know, in a fancy restaurant, he may not be able to pull that one off. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So, in other words, every mouthful is simply deepening their involvement in the complexities of material nature, right? Because it means another living entity is involved. If you're eating something, if it has any benefit, then it had to be connected with something with life, right? And so then some other living entity is involved. So your connection with them, your debt to them. You know, does that make sense? It's supposed to be offered, you're not recognizing, so you're not applying your intelligence, the mind is not absorbed, one's deepening one's attachments. So all these different things, one's just becoming more and more entangled, as Prabhupada said, by every mouthful. Right? So we can understand if one is taking prasad, then every mouthful is liberating you from these complexities like that. So one can remember that. And so then if you have a bucket full of halava, then that is a lot of mouthfuls of, you know, liberating realization. Until one, you know, one gets so advanced until one goes into samadhi.
He was talking about sleeping his way back to Godhead, so maybe it's possible.
No, but you'd have to eat first to sleep.
So the bucket of halva and then sleep your way.
No, but you wouldn't look at it sleeping your way back to Godhead, you eat your way back to Godhead.
That's true.
Is it quantity or quantity over quality in this case? Or?
You meaning quality of quantity of the prasad or quality of the prasad?
No, like advancement, you know, due to, you know, how I'm getting free from material entanglement, you know, or is it like the quality of the meditation?
The quality of the meditation. Means once Krishna consciousness always seems to have something to do with it. That seems to be the point Krishna's making. Yeah. You know, so it's not as much the activity as it's the consciousness.
So even just like, even one rasa malai can be equal to, or can be even greater than a whole bucket of halva done without proper consciousness.
But you can have both.
Yes, but then the question comes is in this example. Now, what would you say to one mouthful of halva as opposed to one bucket full of rasa malai? there was one's own particular, you say. tastes were involved in this, in this process. As I noticed, he immediately switched from halava to rasamala. Yeah. So in other words, you win the argument, but you don't necessarily make any more advancement. You know, like that's what it is. So you know if you're ever roommates with him, walk in with a bucket of halava and he'll leave you alone. If you walk in with a bucket of ras malai, you got problems.
Yeah.
Okay. But preparing nice, simple vegetable dishes, offering them before the picture or deity of Lord Krishna, and bowing down and praying for him to accept such a humble offering, enables one to advance steadily in life, to purify the body and to create fine brain tissues, which lead to clear thinking. So here's another place you're saying taking prasad develops fine brain tissues, right? Another thing, chanting develops fine brain tissues, milk develops fine brain tissues, and being in an aesthetic environment develops fine brain tissues, right? So all these processes, you know, and natural situations of Krishna consciousness, they develop the finer brain tissues by which one can, yes, yeah, which will lead to clear thinking, right? So there's clear thinking, understanding who you are, how the world, that's finer brain tissues, right? But it's still, even you have finer brain tissues, it's still by Krishna's grace. Above all, the offering should be made with an attitude of love, right? So the mechanics are explained, but above all, then there's love. Because there always is that element, they go together. The love is expressed through the activity, but one always has to remember is that it's the love that you're trying to get to. So in the beginning, there may not be so much, you'd perform the activity. But with time and trying to do that sincerely, then Krishna within the heart is giving that intelligence, removing that ignorance. Right? Then one can come to the platform to take up that activity with love. Right? So that should be added. Not that I'm doing the activity now, I wasn't so good at it before, but now I'm really perfect at it. No. It's perfection is the love, the affection. Right? And since one's doing it there, then to the best of one's ability, one will be trying to perform the activity. Because if you have affection for someone, then you want that the activity, the result would go nicely for them. That means the activity has to be proper. Does that make sense?
I was wondering what he asked Prabhupada about that.
A little louder?
One devotee asked Sri Prabhupada, we are supposed to offer food with love and devotion. And he said, we don't have it, but I don't have it. We don't have any love. And Sri Prabhupada said, are you chanting 16 rounds? I said, yes. Are you falling for regular principles? I said, yes. He says, that is your love and devotion.
Yeah. It means, in other words, we don't have love on the platform, prema. But why would one be doing it? Why would one be chanting 16 rounds, following the four regular principles, offering the food? Why would you be doing that? The principle of serving the Lord has been accepted.
Could you have someone who does it to develop fine brain tissue?
Can you do it? Why would you want to develop fine brain tissue?
So I can control and enjoy the world better.
I don't know that you need finer brain tissues to do that.
You
know what I'm saying? I mean, like a Genghis Khan, he controlled most of the world that was known at the time. And I'm not sure that finer brain tissues would be
the prominent.
Yeah. Because he had some certain strict rules that kept his whole empire together. A guest comes to your house, you don't take care of him. Death. You know, you take from someone else. Death. You know, you do this. Death. You know, that was it. It was a whole long list that you do this wrong, you get killed. There's nothing in between. Like that. And that kept everybody very happy. So I don't know that you were dealing with a lot of finer brain tissues. No. There might not even been one finer brain tissue. You know?
But maybe some jnanis were.
Some jnanis. The jnanis don't want to control the world.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So they're two different.
They still see.
You know, the Gyanis, they sit in some kind of, you know, unless it's a really old university with these really tall windows, they sit in some office that's not so light, you know, I mean, other than the tube lights and all that. And, you know, you never hear of them.
That's true. Thank
you. You know what I'm saying?
Look,
you understand? So, yeah. So it's two different things.
My doubt is that while this summer I was in Denmark, and some people, they expressed interest in chanting, but they had no concept of devotional service. They were not devotees at all.
No, but by chanting, if they're hearing from devotees, then by chanting, then they'll get purified. Mm. Then they'll be able to hear.
Yeah.
But if they're interested in kirtan by other groups that aren't coming in parampara, but not interested in kirtan by that what's coming in parampara, then they'll have a problem. Right?
So initially it's okay to motivate people to start chanting without actually including the Lord, and then later, or is there a gray area?
I mean, you have a kirtan, but you probably wouldn't give a 1-hour lecture on chanting and leave God out of it.
No.
But having a kirtan and encouraging people to take part, that you do. Same with prasad. Like, remember one devotee was saying that he came to the Sunday feast. He was he didn't like the devotees, didn't like, you know, he was a complete atheist. But as his friend was kind of interested. And so he would go, because, you know, it's free and it's nice, so then he would go along with them. And then after, I think, I can't remember if it was 7 weeks or 9 weeks, he moved into the temple.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the process works. That's fast. Right? 7 weeks from a total atheist to, you know, a surrendered devotee. It's not bad.
I think in Bulgaria they have one who came first time because he wanted to bomb the place.
Okay.
He moved in.
He took the shot and moved in. Okay, cool. Yeah.
Actually, besides love being a motivation, I heard Prabhupada say that actually this process is for those who are very selfish.
Yeah, well, I mean, because there's self-realization, so it's
How do we, you know, if we bring into someone self-motivated, because there's so much benefit.
If we're self-motivated, we may be eventually get purified of that motive, but if you're, you know, very self-motivated.
I just want to check what I heard is that you said that someone has to hear someone chanting Hare Krishna that's connected to the
palm.
That's
beautiful.
And I was thinking of the Beatles.
The Beatles?
Well, you know, like...
You mean the ones under your sick...
the band, they're all singing, you know, isn't it?
Yeah, but where did they get the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra from?
They got it from Prabhupada.
Yeah, so then.
Okay, so if a band gets it from a devotee that was connected and they stay singing it, it's still.
So yeah, some benefit. You know, it's just all the other stuff they're talking about may not be so beneficial. But it's not that now everything they sing is not spiritual.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. I just know people that they're not devotee bands, but somehow they've got the mantra and they're singing, and I'm wondering if there's any benefit. But if they're getting it from us, then there'll be something. Yeah, well, maybe a devotee that's not practicing so full on, but it's still, you know, it's, you know, it gets less and less. It goes, you know. I mean, so there was that Avalon ballroom.
Like that, you know. So Prabhupada is there; he's singing and all that. And as he was singing, it doesn't mention it so much there, at least not in the Lilamrita. I'm not sure if it mentions it in any other book. But all these musicians from all those big bands, they got up on the stage, and one was playing drum, one was doing the different things like that. So they're all taking part. Radhanath Maharaj is, I don't know how long ago it was, maybe like 15 years ago, I think in the mid-90s. He was in Vrindavan, and he was, I think, down at Lloyd Bazaar, and he was sitting there for something, you know, at one of the shops he was waiting or something. And then there was this devotee next to him, you know, he's sitting and chanting, and, you know, big neck beads, and looked very, very serious, very great. And he was chanting and, you know, not paying attention to anything else. And so he didn't know who he was. He'd never seen him before. You know, and Radhanath Maharaj is, you know, quite been he travels a lot, knows, you know, basically, and he remembers and all that. So he was just saying, who he didn't know who he was, you know. He asked, you know, his name was, and he said his name, you know. And he says, oh, where, what temple and this and that. He says, oh, I'm not in a temple. It's just, you know, or before, you know, he had never been in the temple. And so he was, I forget what it was, maybe Moby Grape or one of those, you know, big San Francisco bands. And he had, after the Avalon Ballroom, they made an announcement that the next day that Prabhupada would be having a program at the temple, and that anyone can come. I think they even mentioned initiations. He came. He got initiated. Like that. And then, you know, after the initiation, he went back and was playing with the band. He was playing, you know, from then, and he was involved in the band. And, you know, so this is in the mid-90s. So this had been, you know, since, I think it was 68 or something, was that program. So he had been chanting 16 rounds, following the regulated principles since then. But he never lived in a temple or anything. So, like that. So it has effect. But we don't hear many of those stories. You know, so I wouldn't necessarily take that as a major. Above all, the offering should be made with an attitude of love. Krishna has no need of food, since he already possesses everything that be. Yet, he will accept the offering of one who desires to please him in that way. The important element in preparation, in serving, and in offering is to act with love for Krishna. Okay, so you're consider how you prepare, how you'd serve, how you'd offer. Then it would all be how it would please Krishna. Right? So then, what things would please Krishna in that standards, you know, cleanliness, consciousness, all that would be naturally part of it, right? But it's still the desire to please Krishna that's important to Krishna. Right? The impersonalist philosophers who wish to maintain that the absolute truth is without senses cannot comprehend this verse of Bhagavad Gita. To them it is either a metaphor or proof of the mundane character of Krishna. Just like some will say that the stories in the Bhagavatam, they're just, you know, metaphors or this kind of thing, that they're not actually real like that. So it's the same principle. So I take it as something mundane. But in actuality, Krishna, the Supreme Godhead, has senses. And it is stated that his senses are interchangeable. In other words, one sense can perform the function of any other. This is what it means to say that Krishna is absolute. Lacking senses, he could hardly be considered full in all opulences. Because we're saying, you know, God has all opulence, and if he's everything and all that, then why wouldn't he have senses? Why would only the illusion have senses and he wouldn't? Right? Just because we're having a bad day and can't get what we want with our senses, why is it therefore God can't have any senses? Right?
Because we're jealous.
Yeah. In the seventh chapter, Krishna has explained that he impregnates the living entities into material nature. This is done by his looking upon material nature. And so in this instance, Krishna's hearing the devotee's word of love in offering foodstuffs is wholly identical with his eating and actually tasting. Right? So that's why it's through the mantra. Right? Yeah. This point should be emphasized. Because he is the absolute, because of his absolute position, his hearing is wholly identical with his eating and tasting. Only the devotee who accepts Krishna as he describes himself without interpretation can understand that the Supreme Absolute Truth can eat and enjoy, eat food and enjoy it. This is enjoyed because it's being offered. Like that. So, you know, some places Prabhupada is defined by seeing, because you're bringing, through seeing he eats it, and here it's through hearing he eats it. So it doesn't, for him that's not a problem. But that's Krishna. He can do that. You know? At least once you get past, I think, about 2 years old, these kind of processes, the interchangeability of senses doesn't seem to work, right? Children, you know, food goes all over, and somehow or another they, you know, become nourished. But you know, after a certain age, you have to put it in your mouth. And then,
how about if you take acid?
Take acid.
People talk about they can hear colors and stuff.
Hear colors.
Yeah, something.
It says it's at least in America, in court, you can prove that someone's taken acid 7 times. You can prove that they're insane, so you can get them off of anything by pleading insanity.
Would that mean that Hitler got off? Would get off?
No, that was only once.
Oh,
yeah, that was only once.
Okay.
He's talking about that one example when the devotee said, what about Hitler on acid? So he says, so that means Hitler could get off? And so he said, no, that was only once. It needs to be 7 times. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
As far as about offering food, there are different...
Can you do it within the bucket? You have the bucket of Rasa Malai, can you just offer the whole bucket? You have to take it out.
It's been in the bucket.
Spoon. Okay. Yeah, okay. That would work. But yep. Now, if you were on one side of the bucket and he was on the other side of the bucket, would you be using a spoon?
Interesting.
A lot of considerations.
There are different levels of offering food.
There are different levels of offering food.
You know, and I was thinking, you know, what... So Krishna knows what level you're on?
He knows what level you're on? What do you mean?
Like sometimes you say...
You're on level 23, so now you've gotten through, you know, up to the higher level, and now you're dealing with the dragons, or, you know...
You see the pujari offering... Boga to Lady Shringadev, and then he does different things, and then the brown thread comes out, and all these different things, and all the rituals and everything. And whereas, you know, somebody else, you know, then Prabhupada says, you know, about bowing, offering them before the picture of the deity of Lord Krishna, and bowing down and praying for him to accept such a humble offering. So then he's saying that's also acceptable, like just like simple.
Well, it's all part of the same process. It's just a matter of how much of the ritual's there. Point is in the temple, you use all that. So only those who are second initiated are making the offering. But in whatever situation one's in, one makes an offering and follows this. So this is the principle. Right? Does that make sense? And then in the temple, there's a little bit more detail. Is that what's that?
The main thing is the consciousness, though.
Yeah, the consciousness that one's trying to do. But it's not that, oh, I got the consciousness, so I won't bother with the endeavor. No, the two go together. Since the endeavor is meant to awaken consciousness, it doesn't mean that when consciousness is there, you give up the endeavor. Right? Does that make sense? That's how the Maya bodies work.
Kept the ladder away.
Yeah. Yeah, that, didn't you notice in the temples they have this, it means on the offering wall there's so many shells?
On the offering wall?
Yeah, there's so many shells there. So depending upon what level you're at, you use that shell to do your offering.
I have to check that one.
Yeah. So you have to be careful. Is that, you know, it's like whether you use the counter or whether you use the shell for, you know, like that when you're making your offer. Okay. 12.5. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. Because if you're working for nothing, it's very hard to be inspired to work. Right? So if everything is unmanifested and impersonal, then what are you actually working for? So it'll always be a problem. You know, because we do have a mind. We do have senses. So it's going to be a problem. If there was no mind, of course, it wouldn't be a problem, because who cares? You know. The group of transcendentalists who follow the path of the inconceivable, unmanifested, and personal feature of the Supreme Lord are called jnana yogis. And persons who are in full Krishna consciousness, engaged in devotional service to the Lord, are called bhakti yogis. Now, here the difference between jnana yoga and bhakti yoga is definitely expressed. The process of jnana yoga, although ultimately bringing one to the same goal, is very troublesome. Whereas the path of bhakti yoga, the process of being in direct service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is easier and is natural for the embodied soul. Because they will both bring you to the liberated platform. Right? Because they say to the same goal. You can say, oh, that means the devotional service. No, the jnanis, their goal is not devotional service. Their goal is liberation. Right? And so for the devotee, he comes to that point of liberation, you know, and then moves on to the transcendental world. So therefore they have that same goal. Right? For one, it's their final goal. For the devotees, it's not. For one, it's the goal they're trying to obtain. For the devotees, it's just the situation that you function from. Right? So being liberated for the impersonalist is his goal. That's his prayojana. For the devotee, being liberated is sambandha. It's the position he functions from. Does that make sense? That's where the impersonalists have problem. When, because it's being the goal, as Aniruddha, once obtaining it, it moves back to sambandha, to prajumna. Now what are they going to do with it? Because now they're situated there, but then there's desire from prajumna. So what desire can you have being on the Brahman platform where there's everything is inconceivable, unmanifested, and impersonal? There is no desire. So as soon as there's a desire, then you're going to deal with qualities. And since you don't understand Brahman is saguna with qualities, then you can't move forward. So you'll move back to the saguna of the material nature. Right? Because of this element of anything that's a goal, once getting it, then becomes part of the field. Right? So the devotees never look at it as a goal. It's always that it's a situation which to serve Krishna from. The individual soul is embodied since time immemorial. It is very difficult for him to simply theoretically understand that he is not the body. Therefore, the bhakti yogi accepts the deity of Krishna as worshipable, because there is some bodily conception fixed in the mind. Right? He's not doing it because Krishna doesn't have a form. He's doing it because he can only relate to things that are connected, you know, physically. Of course, worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his form within the temple is not idol worship. There's evidence in the Vedic literature that worship may be saguna or nirguna, of the supreme possessing or not possessing attributes. Worship of the deity in the temple is saguna worship, for the Lord is represented by material qualities. But the form of the Lord, though represented by material qualities, such as stone, wood, or oil paint, is not actually material. That is the absolute nature of the Supreme Lord. It's all his energy, so it's all him. So the point is, his material energy is part of him. But it's him that is part of. Not that he becomes part of material energy. Material energy is part of him. So he can manifest, you know, wherever he likes. And so he defines how he'll manifest. So that's the Archamurti. Okay. Lesson 46, so the conclusion.
Where is the description of the Archamurti? What Shastra?
What Shastra? It means it's described in the Pancharatra. That's where the first section is jnana, which means describing how the Lord is non-different from the deity. Yes?
But
just wondering if you can explain that, do you Krishna's worship, of course, is some bodily concept fixed in the mind?
Bodily concept, because we think he's metal, or we think he's stone, or like that. But at the same time, we know he's not, so you get both of them running at once.
Okay.
But the point is that with time, the prominence is that he's, you know, this is Krishna, and not so much of the
deity. The other day, one Maharaji asked me what the marking was on one of the gopis. So when you're explaining, oh, it's the marble, is it all right to say that?
I mean, just saying, yeah, there's the, you know, it's just the marble has those markings. Yeah, that's like, but the point is, you know, don't worry about it.
No, I wasn't
looking for that sheet. No. I mean, that's what it is. But, yeah. You know, it's just not something you really worry about.
Where is the description of how the deity, what it actually, not that it's not different, but what it looks like, what, you know?
That's in the Silpa Shastra. So lesson 46. Matter is not, therefore, the ultimate cause of the universe. The ultimate creator is the powerful, while the material world is the power only. Okay. So matter, though, so ultimately God is the creator of everything. It's coming from Him, not matter. It's only the energy. 9:10. This material energy, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. It is clearly stated here that the Supreme Lord, although aloof from all the activities of the material world, remains the Supreme Director. The Supreme Lord is the Supreme Will and the background of this material manifestation, but the management is being conducted by material nature. Krishna also states in Bhagavad Gita that of all of the living entities in different forms and species, I am the Father. The Father gives seeds to the womb of the mother for the child, and similarly the Supreme Lord, by his mere glance, injects all the living entities into the womb of material nature, and they come out in their different forms and species according to their last desires and activities. All these living entities, although born under the glance of the Supreme Lord, take their different bodies according to their past deeds and desires. So they're coming from the Lord, but the point is their consciousness is within the mundane, right? That they want to enjoy separately from the Lord. So based on that, then they take their birth. Right? So you can understand is that, you know, when the living is ejected into the universe, that all those living entities, you know, have been there before. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter, because if he breathes in and out every 3/4 of a second, you know, then does that make sense? So it's an ongoing process. Right? So material nature then knows that this mentality is there, therefore this body is there, this situation is there, everything like that. She arranges all of it. But it's still Krishna's potency that's allowing it to happen. Right? He's the potent. Right? And this is then the potency. So the Lord is not directly attached to this material creation. He simply glances over material nature. Material nature is thus activated, and everything is created immediately. Because he glances over material nature, there is undoubtedly activity on the part of the Supreme Lord. But he has nothing to do with the manifestation of the material world directly. This example is given in the Smriti. When there is a fragrant flower before someone, the fragrance is touched by the smelling power of the person, yet the smelling and the flower are detached from one another. There is a similar connection between the material world and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, it has nothing to do with this material world, but he creates by his glance and ordains. In summary, material nature without the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot do anything. Yet the Supreme Personality is detached from all material activities. Right? Because the person smelling the flower, you're not touching the flower. Right? But at the same time, as you know you are able to be aware of the flower. So in the same way, the Lord is connected, but he's not involved. Because we're establishing here is that the Lord is above and beyond all these things. Because then we see that the soul is beyond, and then the Lord is beyond. And so whatever one's looking for has to come from this beyond. 9:11. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme Lord of all that be. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruit of activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. People jeer at Krishna because they are envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Their destiny is certainly to take birth after birth in the species of atheistic and demoniac life. Perpetually, their real knowledge will remain under delusion. Gradually, they will regress to the darkest region of creation. So the devotees, they understand. So they're giving that knowledge. Everyone else is practicing it. Those who don't, then it won't work out so good. Summary of the main points. The highest reality is the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. The living entities are his parts and parcels, identical in quality with him, and eternally subordinate to him. The material energy works under his supervision. The living entities have a tendency to enjoy separately from the Lord, and this is the cause of their suffering in the material world. Once conditioned by matter, they cannot free themselves by their own endeavor. Only the Lord or his representative can restore them in their original position of transcendental loving service. The living entities can attain to this position by performing their duties in connection with the Lord. This is possible because the Lord is all-pervading through his potencies. So that then summarizes this section. So we're trying to establish the Supreme Lord and the living entities, the material energy. So we can see this is all sambandhigyan. So this has now been established nicely, so we understand who's who and what's what. And that then finishes the book. Yes. So any further questions on this? Sir, do you know anything about the book? The next book?
I haven't heard from
Father Mark. Okay, yeah, I haven't seen him in a few days. Yeah.
I know Father Mark, he'll come to the second lecture, there will be a second lecture.
But is he bringing the books?
They are not ready.
Books are not ready. Yes?
It seems that as we advance, we really have to wake up to the fact that our identity is total illusion.
Our external identity is, yes. Our condition, but our constitutional, that's real.
And so, what if you realize that you really don't want to wake up to the role that you're temporarily playing? And as you wake up, how much do you have to detach yourself from the role that you're playing? Or is it... as you increase your service and increase your love, like I have children, and I'm attached to being their mom.
No, that's what was the point is that the living entities contain to their position by performing their duties in connection with the Lord. Point is all those things have to be connected with the Lord.
Well, it already has been.
But no, has been is. You don't want to be a has-been.
So I was just thinking that as I wake up more and more, I have to like really...
No, it's just a matter of the duties remain the same.
Uh-huh.
It's just who's getting the pleasure from it. That's what changes.
Like you were giving that example the other day of when the child... When the mom says, I love you, the child says, I love you, and you go into that whole thing. Well, actually, it's not me who you really love, because I'm really... I don't know. And also, I just want to say that after hearing your classes, I don't think I'm ever going to be able to say to somebody, well, if you don't have children, you don't know what it's like to raise them, because like you really have quite a grasp.
I'm going to raise children.
Okay. The point is that the duty doesn't change. And so, but what you're adding is that Krishna's involved, and that ultimately it's Krishna, because we're saying is that you're interacting with the children, but the point is the childness in the children is Krishna. So the difficulty is we're thinking it's the body that's creating that reaction, because we think the material energy is independently functioning. That's why these last points are being made, is that material energy doesn't function separately. You know? So it's actually Krishna's potency that they're acting in this way. So we may have that attraction to interact with this particular aspect of relationship, but we have to ultimately remember it's Krishna. He's actually, it's that quality is actually him. We think it's the dead matter. And so if we add in that Krishna is making these arrangements, Krishna makes all this, and Krishna allows all this, and all these different things, then he's involved, and we'll find that there'll be more taste in that than just that it's just oneself and the family. Does that make sense? So it's not, nothing's lost, something's gained. But because something greater is gained, the other aspects aren't as important, but it doesn't mean that the form of it changes. You know what I'm saying? As duty and activity, one will always interact with the children as the mother. That's not going to change. But what's going to change is your motive for doing that. Instead of being to please yourself, it'll be to please Krishna.
It also seems to me that as you do make advancement, the relationship will change, because you won't be an illusion.
No, the form still stays the same. I mean, it's what mother takes care, you know, that their food and their clothing and their health and their safety and all that. That still remains. That doesn't change. But thinking that you're the, you know, supreme control of the universe to do that, that may change. Then we understand it's by Krishna's grace that you're able to do these activities of a mother.
Well, I guess right now I'm thinking of the example of when Mother Yashoda looked inside Krishna's mouth, and all of a sudden she, you know, realized, you know, well, I'm not really, you know, his mom, and, you know, she's looking in and seeing all the universe, and, you know, so she actually got a different mentality.
In other words, those things that, let's say, you will, that... In other words, there's a variety of activities that could be done. And so you may choose those activities according to your particular attachment at the time. Right? That element may change. You know? But it doesn't mean that the activities will change. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, let us say they're busy during the week, you're busy during the week. And so, you know, you have your services and everything like that, and they have their activity. So then it would be very natural to get together on the weekend, right? But due to attachment, you want them, you know, they have to call during the week and they have to do this and that. And so these things that may not fit in so well, but because of the need and attachment, it's going on. So as one relaxes on that, it may be one doesn't do that anymore. You know what I'm saying? In other words, one's adding those things, but getting together, interacting in the ways that generally parents and children interact, that won't change. Does that make sense? Of course, you have the element is that, you know, when they're bigger than 3 years old, then somehow or other things start to change anyway. You know, it's like that, you know.
I'm a little emotional. My daughter died. So now, like, when I'm in the temple room, sometimes I think I have to, like, stop thinking about I was Leela's mom, because Leela
It's hard for me to give up that identity.
No, but the point is that one has, one is playing that part in here because one is born. The point is it's personal, right? It means we're worried that the spiritual means impersonal, right? But we're the parent, and someone's the child. Just like we're the child and someone else was the parent, and like this, so it's all like that. So if they go back to Godhead and we're connected to them, then that means we go back to Godhead. So it's not
a
problem.
I have to wake up and realize that I'm not this female.
No, but it's a role that's played. It's just like, let's say the drama goes on and you have a particular part in the drama. You can't say, well, I'm not that part in the drama. You can say, I'm not that person. You can say, I'm not King Lear, but you can't say, I'm not the person playing the part of King Lear. Does that make sense? So you're playing the part of the parent. But it doesn't mean that you are the body that's the parent and they're the body that was the child. You're the soul that was playing that part of the parent. They're the soul that's playing the part of the child. And because of that role, there is a connection. But at the same time, as the connection's not, you know, you'll eternally be the mother, they'll eternally be the child. In the spiritual world, it may be something else. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But that connection, that's all one's all part of the same mission and that, so everybody's going to be together there. You know what I'm saying? So that they move on, but you're able to do that part so they could grow up and so that they could perfect their life in Krishna consciousness, so then you have a role in that. Does that make sense? Those parts stay.
That's my way of helping you understand that I think I did have that role.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's fine. Is that something?
But sometimes I think, I don't want to wake up now.
No, but the point is waking up doesn't mean that it will be that anything's lost. That's the whole point. Nothing's lost by waking up like that. Yeah, suffering is there because we're not awake. You know, when we're awake, then great, she's gone back to Godhead, you know, the question is why am I still here? You know, it's like that, you know, she went, you know, why am I here? You know, what did I do wrong? You know, like that, you know, so it's kind of like, you know, she, you know, so then it's a matter of that, you know, the situation is good, it's fine, you know, and so then one moves forward, you know, so there's no loss. That's what Krishna says. There's no loss or diminution. There's nothing. Nothing gets less, right?
Yeah,
like that.
I'm not that woken up yet. I'm thinking I'm going
to
lose.
Yeah, not woken up enough to understand that waking up is not a bad thing. Yeah, because we're worried that it means all this. No, it doesn't mean. That's why Krishna. That's why this point is being made. It's one of the adhikaranas. If it wasn't adhikarana, you know, means it would be a sub point. Let's see, what is that? That's four. Yeah, the confidential servants of Godhead explain that any man can attain to a transcendental loving service of Godhead by his own occupation. Like that. So you contain love of God by performing your occupation nicely. So the occupation isn't lost. It's just we're finding such taste in only recognizing half of the relationship. If we add God into it, which is the other half, then it just gets better. It's not that it's anything's lost. Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense. Yes.
I was wondering if you could explain what the duty of a mother is. Like, I see so many, we're very much involved in when the children are young, but when they grow up, then sometimes the devoted mothers, then they just, you know, they want to put on white and, you know, devote all to Krishna. But I was wondering if you could tell the duty of us, you know, even to our grandchildren, what is our duty to the, and like, even for the daughters, they'll go off to another family. Do we still have duty there? Is it, you know, is it...
It means duties are there, but... it becomes the element of how much you know, what's the opportunity? You know what I'm saying? The natural thing is that the opportunity is there. Generally, like the birth of the children is done at the mother's house, not at the husband's place and stuff like this. So there's all. So the idea is that when one takes up the Grihastha ashram, then the form becomes, you know, all encompassing. And so then the difficulty is that one is distracted, right? And so all the pains and pleasures and everything that are there, you know, it's very intense, right? And so then, but as one matures, one sees that, you know, it works, so it's not as much is required, you know? Yeah, physically. It means this. So as one goes, then one is able to appreciate those who are new at it, then they get so overwhelmed by it, they don't actually have to be. And that as time you work out how to be Krishna conscious in these situations, so you can help them appreciate that. Does that make sense? So the whole principle is there, because otherwise without that kind of closeness and that, it may not be appreciated. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea. The Vanaprastha element basically means that one has come to understand how to engage oneself, but in the process of doing that, you can give others advice on how they can apply that to themselves. Like that. So that's the idea. So depending upon the situation, then the women can be more involved in the family interaction or less, or a combination. It doesn't matter.
There's no real duty that when they're grown up you have to play anymore.
Duty is that you're there to give direction, advice, support, like that kind of thing, and then it's up to them how much they want you to be involved or not. And that, and understanding that just as one was, you know, so absorbed and that was complete in itself when one was younger, that they'll have a tendency to do the same thing. So when they involve you, you get involved. When they don't involve you, you don't worry about it. Because if you get worried about it, you'll only be in anxiety, because it's their life, it's their kids. You know what I'm saying? Grandchildren aren't your children. They're the children's children. So it has advantages both ways. One is when they're yelling and screaming and making trouble, they're their problem, not yours. You know? But at the same time is that the interaction with them has even more interest than with one's own children. You know, it's just that's the nature of the way it works. So the idea is that if one is satisfied in Krishna consciousness, then, and one sees how to perform those activities in connection to Krishna, then it doesn't matter if there's involvement with the family, it's not a distraction, because you know how to be Krishna conscious in that situation. And if that opportunity is not there, you're not bothered, because you just continue on doing your own personal development. You know?
That's the hard part. Because you actually are in mental plane, you are involved and you are concerned.
No, but being concerned and all that's there, but you still have to understand it's their life.
That's the hard part.
But, so that's why there's, you know, one is, has the opportunity to be involved.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you learn by those mistakes, so they'll learn by them. Better that they don't go through them. But if they're smart enough, they'll learn by hearing. If they're not, then they'll have to go through it. You know? It's just, that's the thing. It's their life. So one does the best one can.
Well, it's wild. So we went through so much without knowing Srila Prabhupada, and then to watch our children going through the same thing.
Well, that's just material energy. It's just the way, that's the way it works. Whether you know Prabhupada or not, there's still diapers to change. You know, they still cry at night. They still, you know, all these things. It's material nature doesn't change. Later years, then that's it's still the influences are the same. You know what I'm saying? It's just a matter of whether you're a punk for Krishna or not. You know, that's all. You know, that's so it's, those things don't change. What you can change is consciousness. So one tries to give them that association by which they'll take that. But still they're an individual and they have to make, because in other words, we've been involved with the body, and because of that we have a natural situation to help in cultivation of the consciousness. But the point is, the soul and the consciousness, that's them, and that's where that separateness is there. You know, so but the medium used is, you know, the body, the mind, the senses, these elements. Like that. That's just the medium. Because you use that as the medium, you say it's mother. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Somebody said, medium's different, it's a different relationship. Does that make sense? So relationship is defined by the medium. Does that make sense? So these things, they don't change. What changes is the consciousness and the seeing Krishna as part of that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I really want them day to day that our children's lives would look different than what our lives look like. But they don't. They look the same. You're going through the same mistakes and same...
That'll always be there. No, that'll always be there. What may change is the forms in which that is. Instead of being completely mundane, they may be more, you know, traditional or more Vedic. But the happinesses and distresses of the material world don't change. They're the same.
Temptations and...
Everything's exactly the same. Everything's the same. Nothing changes. What changes is one's... What one is looking for is their ability to deal with it and move forward. That's what you're looking for, but it doesn't change. You know what I'm saying? Because it's the same knowledge to be learned, and so therefore the same practices. It's just a matter of what's the specific environment that you practice in. That's the difference.
A family, if we see repeated nature coming in that family, they've got to sort of break through that.
It just means that, in other words, that particular kind of conditioning is the common ground on the material platform between those particular living entities. That's why they're in that family. You have that kind of consciousness, therefore you're going to create that environment. They have that consciousness, therefore, they'll be comfortable in that environment. You know, that. So that's why different living entities are put together. You know, it's because there's something common in the consciousness. But as soul, then they all have the common ground of being devotee of Krishna. So that's the ultimate common principle that one has to see. Because the other ones, then that, you know, one will deal with it and one will get through that. So if you figured out how to get through it, then you'll be able to help others in that conditioning get through it. That's the whole idea of you've done something, then you can train others with it. That's the idea of teaching. You've understood it, you've practiced it, now you teach others. Does that make sense? But because you've gone through that, it doesn't bother you so much. You know what I'm saying? Well, that same conditioning that someone else doesn't have, they may have trouble dealing with it. Right? But they have other conditionings they've gone through, they can deal with that. That's why, does that make sense? You know? Yeah. Yes.
In regard to the study guide, the author was considering that now that you've finished, if you were to go back through the Adhikaras and just show the connection to that.
Oh, okay.
What he was saying, it depends on if you are prepared to do that if you want.
Right now, we only have five minutes.
Just a quick run through.
For the next 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. So that means this idea is that it'll be ready tomorrow.
No. No, the time scheme for when the next part will be ready is maybe 7 days.
7 days? That's a problem. Because basically, we have solid these next couple of weeks, and then after that, I wasn't sure about it before, but there'll be some traveling from, I think, the 11th through to, I think, the beginning of the next month. I have to figure out what's the day of the next month. So that's the problem. Can you give us the book now, and then how you say it? We can use it for the next 2 weeks, and then he can.
I was just a joke.
the fact to get it ready is after 2 weeks, so that we can use it now for the 2 weeks, because then we'll have plenty of time.
He could give you the materials, the guts of the book. The overriding format, that's something that's your...
But does he have anything like the beginning of it? If he has the first little bit of it, that's enough for 2 weeks, he could give us just that, and then we could work with that for the next 2 weeks. Yeah. And then he could finish it up, and then when we come back, then we...
Yeah. Okay. He's the proofreader.
Oh, you're the proofreader. So...
I'm not the proofreader. He'll be done, so I know.
Okay, so then... What would be the when would we be able to get something so that we could work with?
We'll try to have something for tomorrow.
For tomorrow, for the morning. Okay. Okay. So then we can go over this and discuss anything on this at 10:30, and then we're finished, and then we'll start tomorrow with that. Yeah, because the point is, it doesn't have to be printed. It doesn't have to be like that. It can just be loose pages like that. That's what we have, because otherwise, till the 11th, I think.
That is till the end of the month.
Yeah.
For a full block, or just some...
No, it's a full block. There were like 2 days here or there, but I figured that wouldn't be worthwhile. Just have a day, and then again a gap, and then another like this. So
the students can plan between the 11th and the start of the next month, they could...
Yeah, they can study and catch up on things and, essays and that haven't been done. And then we'll start again, try to run the same schedule.
11th of January till 7th.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's the date, but it might be like 1st or 2nd or something like that. I just have to look and see where's the Monday or Thursday. I just know 11th is on this end, but I'm not sure what's on that end. Okay, so then we'll continue with this.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Janyata Gaura Premanandi.